Hello everyone, and welcome to Tomorrow's Goals and Today's Questions, the podcast where big ideas meet a real world impact. My name is Anna Czajkowska, and today we're diving headfirst into one of the most urgent and ambitious blueprints for our planet, the Sustainable Development Goals 2030, or short, SDG 2030. But we're not just skimming the surface, no. We're joined by someone who lives and breathes global justice. Our guest is none other than Mr. Mathil from Alliance Sud, a leading voice in Switzerland's fight for fair development policies. Together, we'll unpack in today's episode how the UN's SDGs are shaping real-world policies and business practices. Are they driving real change or just lofty promises? We'll dig into their power, their pitfalls, and what role law, politics, and Switzerland itself play in making or breaking global sustainability. Let's find out what's really at stake. And stick around, because what we talk about today affects all of us, from the streets of St. Gallen to communities around the world. Let's get started. Mr. Mathil, it's a real pleasure to have you with us today. Thank you so much for making the time to join us. But before we dive into the big questions that we have for you today around sustainable development, let's start with a quick elevator ride, shall we? If you had just 1 minute to introduce yourself and your mission at Alliance Sud, what would your pitch be?
Thanks a lot for the invitation. First of all, it's a pleasure to be with you today. Well, my pitch would be at Alliance Sud, I'm in charge of all questions related to business contribution to sustainable development. So it's a big box. There are many, of course, elements which are linked to the contribution or the potential contribution of business to sustainable development. It's my role is to put the finger on each and every aspect where business should do more, should contribute more constructively to sustainable development.
That sounds really interesting. Before we dive deeper, maybe let's also start from a more personal perspective. What personally motivated you to work on global sustainability and development issues? And why do you believe that the SDGs are crucial?
Well, I had the pleasure to have a career with the federal government, with the international organization as an independent lawyer, attorney at law. And my conclusion is that everybody should be involved with the sustainability. There's no way around it, whether you are in business, in government, in NGOs and so on. You should focus on sustainable, whatever, business or corporation. And the SDGs are, well, a crucial landmark. They are the global reference framework for talking about sustainable development.
All right. You've already mentioned that you engage with policymakers, NGOs, and businesses. What has been your experience with the practical implementation, actually, of the SDGs? Where have you seen success, or where do challenges still remain?
That challenge across the board, I mean, as we have seen last year's SDG report, the SDGs are off track for the vast majority of them. 30% are actually either stagnating or there's even regression on the implementation of SDGs. And there's other 30%, there's only marginal progress. So there's a huge room for improvement at all level. We may come back to that.
You have already mentioned that we don't see a lot of progress currently, but overall, looking at the global sustainability debate today, what maybe also gives you hope and what maybe on the other side, apart from not reaching already goals, does concern you additionally to that?
Well, of course, the new administration in the United States of America is a major concern. We've never seen that before, isn't it? Trump 2 administration withdrawing from, for the second time, Paris Agreement. The complete elimination of USAID, for example, is a major, major step back, and this is very preoccupying. Historically, never seen before.
Definitely. You're already referring to one of our key questions. When we look at the SDGs, obviously, it's no hard law that's set into stone. Would you say, when looking today, if we look at their effectiveness, are they effective or maybe a political fig leaf? Where have the SDGs had a demonstrably positive impact? And is there an example where they have really changed lives?
Well, I think what is the positive impact is that everybody speaks the same language. It's always important to have a common language, common terminology. These are, the SDGs are a global vision. They are supposed to be applicable not only in developing countries, but also in developed countries, also in the north. And hence, from that point of view, again, I'm referring to these shared blueprints, they do matter because everybody in government, everybody in business, everybody in NGO, academia should speak the same language. So that's a major step forward. Now, there have been tremendous shortcomings. We mentioned them in the implementation of the SDGs because there is simply not sufficient political will. Obviously, the UN has certain convening power and certain strength to put people around the same table, if I may say, and have an agenda, very ambitious agenda like the SDGs, but you need the political will to implement them. And that's for the time being, obviously, tremendously lacking. So governments are to be blamed, and we'll talk about that also. There's a business responsibility also to far better contribute to the sustainable development goals.
You've mentioned that governments are to be blamed. You also cover the business aspect, as you've mentioned before. What would you say is the responsibility of companies? So do companies actually adhere to the SDGs, or are they just often using them for greenwashing? Are there any reliable figures that you at Allianz Süd have at hand, or could you give us a little insight to that one?
First of all, the lack of overall monitoring, isn't it? As we know, countries have to report voluntarily on an annual basis on their level of implementation. That's the UN is tracking. There are reports which compare, excuse me, what countries are doing and where they are lacking behind. There's no such thing for business. And that's one of the major weakness of the SDGs is that business are called upon to contribute, isn't it, to sustainable development goals. But there's no overall monitoring, and the reports which exist are not harmonized. So it's very difficult actually to gauge the actual contribution of business to the SDGs, despite the fact that more and more enterprises do say they do contribute to their sustainable development goals.
All right. You've already mentioned that it's very difficult for businesses to contribute. If we look onto the other side, we've mentioned the SDGs are not really set laws that everybody has to adhere to. When we look on the other side, do we say if we really want to make an impact with the SDGs, do we need stricter laws for real sustainability and development? Would you say that voluntary sustainability pledges, as we see them today by companies, are sufficient, or do we actually need hard laws to ensure progress?
I think what is worthwhile calling is that the SDGs as a blueprint, I mean, as a tool, if I may call them as such, are not meant for business. These are macro level, best endeavor clause, isn't it? And in order to ensure contribution and accountability for business to contribute, you would need different tools. And this is where, obviously, hard laws kick in, if I may say. On certain aspects, we know that the market is not integrating many externalities, including impact on climate change of commercial activities. And there, the SDGs alone will not do the trick, if I may say. There, you need hard laws, you need elements, tools, instruments, which are capturing the commercial realities of business. And hence, the answer to your big question, whether voluntary initiatives are not sufficient. Well, history has shown that, unfortunately, the market incentives are not strong enough to ensure compliance with this voluntary initiative. I mean, the latest one is the withdrawal by major investment banks and other international banks from the Glasgow Alliance on Net Zero, which is a voluntary initiative. And that, again, shows that depending on the political new developments, these voluntary initiatives are not enough. So you need, no doubt, regulation both at the national, but also, above all, at the international level.
All right. You've already talked a little bit about SDGs being a rather a blueprint on a macroeconomic level. If you would maybe suggest or have to suggest a certain changes, what reforms would realistically be necessary for us to see significant progress maybe by 2030 already?
Well, I think once again, before talking about reviewing the SDGs, what is clearly lacking today is not a new version of the SDGs as of today, 2025. It's really the political will, because you may have the best, whatever, fine-tuned text around if there is no willingness by government and by business to actually implement, respectively, contribute to these goals, you will not get there. So that is what is lacking primarily today in April 2025, the political will of government and business to actually contribute to what is already on the table.
Thank you very much for your insights on this key question. If we would already move on a little bit more to Switzerland, because Allianz Süd is mainly active in Switzerland, and you're also mentioning the governmental will is lacking. If we look at Switzerland, does Switzerland contribute to a sustainable global economy, or would you say it rather slows it down maybe?
Well, there is a very interesting report, which I'm sure you don't miss, is the annual SDG report, right, which is issued by Professor Sachs and other renowned professors on what they call the spillovers of economies, isn't it, on sustainability. And when one looks at the ranking of Switzerland with regard to the environmental and social impact of the Swiss economy, we are ranked 163rd, just ahead of Singapore, Qatar, and if I remember correctly, and Luxembourg. So that just stresses the importance of the Switzerland as a hub for financial center and a commodity trading hub, which brings with it major negative spillovers around the world. So the contribution is far from being what it should be. So there's a lot of work to be done, we know, and we talked about climate, we know that financial services account for 14 to 16 more CO2 emissions than all the consumption in Switzerland. So just one figure out there. So there's a tremendous, of course, responsibility of Switzerland with regard to its economic and financial center.
How would you say, you've already mentioned before the global north, one big key topic that usually always evolves when we talk about sustainability and development. You've mentioned before that not only emerging countries and developing countries, but also developed countries need to actually meet the SDG 2030s. But could you maybe give us a little bit of insight on how do Swiss banks and companies influence the SDGs also in developing countries?
Well, the first point here is that there's a lot of transparency, isn't it? Because the reporting tools which we have today on who is actually doing business investing and producing and so on in developing countries is not transparent enough. So first of all, we should strengthen reporting obligations imposed on large companies, both financial institutions and multinational firms. That's the first point. This being said, we know, I mean, this has been to some extent studied, specifically related to the financial services, that financial Swiss banks still continue investing in fossil fuel and industries around the world, despite the international recognition that there should be no further investment, including International Energy Organization. That's, of course, a tremendous preoccupation, isn't it? If Switzerland is really serious about becoming a sustainable economy, then obviously there should be far more stringent, first of all, reporting frameworks and, if need be, of course, regulations to limit negative impacts of the Swiss economy in the world, specifically in vulnerable countries, least developed countries, emerging countries, and so on.
Thank you very much. We've already talked about the current now. And if we look at the future, I mean, the SDGs are called SDG 2030. But if we also look at the future outlook, we have to consider what is happening today. You've mentioned far in the beginning about the current American changes. What would you say? Is the 2030 agenda, if we look at it today, still fit for purpose if we consider all the wars, inflation, and trade crises that are happening today? Or does it already need to be reformed to respond to a new global reality?
Yes, you mentioned it. I mean, there is a tremendous level of unpredictability, uncertainty these days in the world. And obviously, it's very difficult to look forward and say, oh, what will happen in 2030, in 5 years from now. I believe what is now should be the call is for, I mean, to support these goals, despite all the uncertainties in the U.S., our leaders, both in the business and in the political world, shall not water down the commitments which the EU, Switzerland have made with regard to the SDGs, with regard to the Paris Agreement, and so on and so forth. It's really not the time to water down and reduce the level of commitments we have made. On the contrary, if the US withdraw, then we should be among the ones who strive to some extent fill the gap, isn't it?
I mean, we touched upon it already a little bit, but if we look to the future and the SDGs, especially also the role of Allianz Süd, if you could rewrite the SDGs or maybe write new SDGs for after 2030, what would you change or what would you implement?
If I would have this power, I would change the governments in many countries where the party, any political will to implement whatever the goals are or will be. So the issue now is not so much, again, to a move to another revision of the SDGs. That will come for sure. But as of today, it's to stick to our commitments. And again, also in business, show the will to keep our promises. We have promised to become net zero economies by 2050. This is a huge endeavor, and we should not derail from that agenda now. So it's not so much about rewriting the SDGs and looking to New York and the UN. There's a lot of homework to be done at home, if I may say, at every board, at every in every annual meeting for business in the political arena in Switzerland. That's what we're pushing for. Be accountable to what you have promised to do. And today.
Totally. That makes sense. What I'm curious about, throughout our conversation, you've mentioned several times the political will is lacking and that you would maybe change that. Do you have insights why the political will here on the front of sustainability and development is lacking? Could you give us a little bit of more deep dive from maybe what you on your daily life with Allianz Süd are experiencing, or why the political will is actually not there where it should be?
Yeah, these are big questions. I mean, one potential answer to that is that we are talking about long-term goals, isn't it? So be it for a politician, be it for, a CEO, a board member, it requires a long-term vision. We still far too much live in short-termism, isn't it? Specifically in business, but also in political life. People want to be reelected, politicians, obviously, and their priorities maybe in 2 years or 4 years. We see that at every level, right? The midterm election in the US, also the elections, the forthcoming presidential in France. I mean, we know that that's part of integral part of the DNA of politics, short-termism. And in order for these development goals to be sustained, you need people with a long-term environment and define long-term strategies, both political, right, regulatory environments, and also at the level of the firms, long-term commitments. Short-termism should be over. And for the time being, unfortunately, there is no incentive to work against short-termism unless the commitment and conviction of leaders, I mean, political both and business leaders who really believe that there's no other way around. The cost of inaction is far too high, isn't it? On the medium and long term.
That's for sure. We're already reaching our end, Mr. Mathil. But if we look out for the long-term perspective and looking beyond 2030, are you optimistic or rather pessimistic about the progress of the SDGs?
I think it takes leadership, isn't it? Don't look to the UN to solve the problem of the world. Leadership comes from all levels, political leadership, but also business leadership. I mean, you have the privilege to be studying at the renowned International Business School in Switzerland. Sustainability should be at the core of, and I'm sure it is, of your courses. And you should come out with a clear conviction that, again, this is not nice to have or tick the box type of exercise. It is really about revisiting the core business strategies of all business, financial, whatever, commodity, trading, consumer goods, you name it, and to put sustainability seriously at the core of business. So both long-termism, commitment, responsibility, it's about responsibility at the end of the day, of any leader should be high on the agenda. And I'm convicted that specifically when I look at people of your age, the conviction is there, the awareness is there, and I hope the conviction is also there.
Thank you very much for all the interesting and inspiring insights that you've provided throughout our conversation today. We've explored how effective these goals have been, the challenges in their implementation, and the role of businesses, laws, and global crisis in shaping sustainability efforts. One final question for you, Mr. Mathil, with the request for a short answer. If there was one key action or change that you could significantly accelerate progress on the SDGs, what would it be?
Well, I mentioned it a few times that I'm repeating myself, the political will is missing.
And just like that, our journey through the relevance and impact of the SDGs comes to a close. Huge thanks to our incredible guest, Mr. Mathil, for joining us today. Not just for the insights, but for the energy, the stories, and the spark you brought to this episode. We started this episode like explorers, setting sail into the unknown, and now we're docking with a boatload of fresh ideas and inspiration. What I can tell you, my fellow listeners, if today's conversation lit a fire in you, don't keep it to yourself. Share it, rate it, and keep the conversation going online. Until next time, keep questioning, keep creating, and remember, the best stories are the ones still waiting to be told. This is Anna Czajkowska signing off. See you next time.
Welcome back, everyone. My name is Leonard, and after that insightful interview with Mr. Mathil from Allianz Süd, Angela and I are diving into a quick yet important reflection and discussion. And wow, what a ride.
Seriously, I expected a pretty standard sustainability talk, but what we got was much broader. Ambitious, even overwhelming at times.
Right, he covered a lot, so from institutional Syria to Switzerland's carbon footprint. And I believe he didn't hold back. On one thing that really stuck with me was his statement, there's no way around sustainability. He made that sound like a universal imperative, but don't you think that's how businesses actually operate?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's also kind of the problem. Businesses might talk like sustainability is non-negotiable, but in reality, short-term goals usually win out. He even acknowledged this when he said politicians and CEOs operate in 2 to 4 year cycles, I think. That tension between long-term responsibility and short-term incentives is real.
Totally. However, to be honest, I found it a bit idealistic when he said every leader should have sustainability on the daily agenda. I mean, should they? Sure. But do they, in reality? Rather rarely. Especially when systems doesn't reward that kind of thinking. I hardly believe this works.
That's where I actually appreciated his honesty. He didn't pretend voluntary initiatives are enough. He straight up said, history shows they fail without regulation. I think that's a bold take, and especially coming from someone in the private sector.
Yeah, true as well, but let me explain my issue. He emphasized regulation as a key driver, yet admitted that the SDGs don't provide binding rules yet. Isn't that kind of the core problem? So we're talking about the SDGs being rather a moral compass. Without reinforcement, they risk becoming, I would say, rather a green PR tool.
Yeah, but he also framed them as a shared language. That's not nothing, I would say. In complex global systems, sometimes alignment around values is a starting point. I think we underestimate how powerful it can be when governments, NGOs, and companies at least agree on the vocabulary of change.
Yeah, fair. But shared vocabulary doesn't guarantee shared action, right? So I found it pretty jarring when he mentioned that Switzerland ranks 163rd globally in terms of ecological and social impact. I mean, that's shocking. You always have that image of Switzerland functioning well in all dimensions, something that's not true here.
Yeah, that surprised me a bit as well, especially since we often see Switzerland as a sustainability leader. That moment made me think about how much of our image of a green country, it's just perception and not really performance.
Yeah, and I believe it shows how fragile progress can be when it's built on voluntary principles alone. That's why I find the current shift in the European Union regulation landscape so promising. They brought up the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, or CSRD, which is a reporting regulation that really marks a turning point where sustainability becomes a legal obligation and not only a just nice-to-have thing.
Yeah, nice example, Leonard. Even though the SDGs were never legally binding, they laid the ethical foundation. And now with frameworks like the CSRD and ESRS, we're starting to see those global goals translated into enforceable business practices.
Nicely said. I believe the SDGs helped us define the vision in the end. But the binding regulations like the CSRD, they give us the structure and they make it stick. So the combination of ambition and accountability in the end is what is going to shape the future, I hope.
Yeah, and that's actually hopeful because it means we're moving towards a system where sustainability isn't just encouraged, it's expected. Not as an add-on, but as a core part of doing business.
Yeah, you could summarize it like that. The SDGs helped us dream it, whereas the CSRD helped us do it. But I want to highlight another point I found alarming, which was his critique on Swiss finance. So he mentioned that the financial center emits, I think, 14 to 16 times more CO2 than the domestic consumption. I mean, that could flip the whole conversation. It's not about what we recycle, it's about what we finance in the end.
Yeah, right. And that's exactly where capitalism comes in. We're not just talking about individual decisions, but a system that's structured around private ownership and market logic. It expands across borders, but the rules to guide it haven't caught up.
Absolutely. And personally, I strongly believe capitalism does not naturally pursue sustainability. It needs governance to even function globally, and that's where things like the SDGs come in. But they are, again, by now more of a moral compass than a rulebook.
Yeah, and that makes it tricky. We're asking a profit-driven system to take responsibility for long-term social and ecological goals, which are goals it was never built to prioritize. And I think the example you just mentioned with the CSRD really shows it well. Without real regulation, we risk just polishing the surface.
Right. It's not about making capitalism a bit greener. It's about really questioning whether the current rules of the game fit the future, and especially fit the future we want in the end.
Yeah, and that brings us to one of the strongest takeaways for me. Sustainability isn't just about internal actions, but really about systemic leverage. And maybe to rephrase it a bit, it isn't just about what a company does internally, but about the broader systems it helps shape. Capital is neutral. Where you invest reflects what kind of future you're building.
Yeah, good point. And that's also where leadership really matters. I appreciated when he talked about the long-term vision as a leadership skill. Myself being interested in leadership, I believe that the real change or the real challenge in the end isn't just a lack of will, it's also the lack of imagination. If leaders can't really picture a different sustainable future, how can they lead us there?
Yeah, and I think that's where we as the next generation come in. This podcast made me reflect on how our education at the University of St. Gallen doesn't just give us knowledge, but really also the responsibility to think systemically. Not to just build greener companies, but to question the rules of the game.
Absolutely. If we want real change, we can not just tweak the incentives. We need to rethink the foundations. And honestly, that's what I'm taking out from this interview in the end. The reminder that sustainability is not just about doing better than the others. It's about doing things differently, being bold, and also taking the first steps.
Couldn't agree more. But maybe that's a good note to end on. Are we business students, future leaders, ready to stop thinking in quarters and start thinking in decades?
That's a question. And I guess the answer depends on whether we treat sustainability as a checkbox or as a compass, right? That's a wrap for our discussion for today. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you're walking away with some fresh insights. Until next time, stay curious and take care.